Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Shorthand. Hello, Mabel.
What's hello, Mabel, in Bulgarian?
Oh, fucking hell. Let's look up hello in Bulgarian, because that is where we're going to spend quite a lot of time today.
Hello.
Helpful.
Great.
It doesn't even want to do it in the translation. It doesn't offer me the option for a microphone in the Bulgarian version. Okay, here we go. How to say hello in Bulgarian.
How to say hello in Bulgarian. Hello.
Здравейте.
What?
Здравейте.
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 How to say hello in Bulgarian.
All right, enough of you. Super cat.
We gave it a good go.
So yes, здравейте to this week's shorthand, where we will be spending quite a lot of time in Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the 8th of July 2014, 28-year-old Lars Mittank was about to fly home to Germany after a lad's holiday in Bulgaria. CCTV footage shows him entering the airport in Varna, Bulgaria, but it also shows that just a few hours later, he sprinted out of the airport, climbed an 8-foot fence, and disappeared into the neighbouring forest. And Lars was never seen or heard from again. The vanishing of Lars Mittank is definitely one of the most bizarre mysteries we've come across. And it's one that's left the police and internet sleuths alike baffled for almost a decade. Why did Lars run out of the airport like that? What happened to him? And where is he now? How can a person in this day and age, because remember this happened in just 2014, simply disappear without a trace? Here's the shorthand.
As Saru said, Lars was 28 years old at the time of his disappearance. He was born and raised in Germany. Lars worked at Wilhelmshaven for a coal-powered plant about 90 miles from his hometown of Marne, I don't know, I'm not a German, where his family lived. In 2012, his father suffered a stroke and needed round-the-clock care from his family. So whenever Lars had time, he would go off home and help out. Lars was also super fit, an avid sportsman. He loved football. And his favourite team were Werder Bremen. When he did go on holiday, he usually went on fishing trips, diving or sporting holidays. This is why his mum was surprised when he decided to go on a lad's holiday to Golden Sands in Bulgaria. His friends had actually originally booked it without him, but they had a last-minute dropout, so Lars decided to go along. That's not going to feel great.
No, I think it's main... They are, like, genuinely his friends. I think they just knew this isn't Lars' cup of tea. Lars is not going to like this. But then when they get the dropout, they're like, Lars, and he explains this, or like his mum explains it as like, Lars was working round the clock.
He was
either at the factory working, or he was helping his mum out with his dad at home. So he just needed a break.
And on the 30th of June 2014, Lars and five of his mates flew to Varna, Bulgaria, which is a port city just on the coast of the Black Sea.
The six of them stayed in the all-inclusive, flashy, four-star HVD Viva Club Hotel in Golden Sands, surrounded by bars and a huge casino. And it sounds like my absolute fucking nightmare. Just, I know they're not Brits, but just Europeans abroad, burnt on the beach, hanging out, getting pissed, going to the casino. Kill me. Nope. And it gets even worse, because when they went on this holiday, the World Cup, the Football World Cup, was on at the same time.
Oh, God.
And so the boys spent their evenings in bars watching the games. But unlike his friends, who'd then spend the day lazing around by the pool or sleeping, Lars would go out and play football on the beach with local high school kids. These kids later described Lars as a completely normal, friendly guy, and were adamant that they did not notice anything strange about his behaviour at all. In fact, according to Lars's friends, the only thing they could think that was a bit off about him was that he wasn't eating much during the holiday. But seeing as it was nearly 40 degrees outside, it's not that shocking.
You're lucky if you can get me to eat a fucking sandwich in 40 degree heat.
What? So at 11 a.m. on the 3rd of July, Lars and his friends went to the aptly named Mystery Golden Sands Bar to watch the World Cup quarterfinals. This bar was absolutely full of football fans, drinking, cracking jokes, singing weird songs, no doubt, doing all sorts of things. But things got a little bit leery after a group of young Bayern Munich fans took issue with Lars's Werder Bremen jersey. Now, I don't know that much about the Bundesliga, but I'm guessing they probably have quite a lot of quite a lot of things going on that we have going on here with clubs.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when you walk through Finsbury Park and there's that pub called the Black Stock that has a sign in the window that says home fans only.
Yeah. So things kick off in this bar and the two groups had a bit of a drunken shouting match, but that's kind of as far as it went. Lars and his friends stayed at the bar for the rest of the evening and were actually the last to leave at around 4 a.m. On their way back to the hotel, Lars's friends decided that they wanted to go to a nearby McDonald's. But Lars, like we said, who was quite health conscious, said he'd go back to the hotel on his own, which is about a kilometer away. So not far.
No, but
far enough.
Far enough in drunk time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what actually happened on his way back. We only have Lars's word for it, but he told his friends that he got into a fight with a group of Russians or Bavarians. He said that he thought they'd been hired by the Bayern Munich fans at the bar because they told him, apparently, it's not hard to hire someone to beat you up for a little money. His friends later said that they weren't sure whether Lars was telling the truth about what happened. What they did know is that Lars's ear was really hurting, supposedly from a punch that he took during the fight. Lars called his girlfriend the next morning and told her about the incident and how much pain his ear was in. His girlfriend tried to convince Lars to go and see a doctor, but he refused. That same evening, the group all went out to the bars again and got drunk for the last time that trip because they thought it would be a good idea to take it easy over the weekend. Come Monday the 7th of July, they checked out of their hotel at about 12 p.m. But by this stage, the pain in Lars's ear had become a lot worse. And, quite rightly, he started to get a bit worried about flying, because it would be unbearably painful. So he reluctantly jumped into a cab with one of his friends and went to a local doctor. There he was diagnosed with a ruptured eardrum, and the doctor told him not to fly and referred him to a hospital in Varna. So Lars told his friends to go back to Germany without him, and that he would wait in Bulgaria until it was okay for him to travel. His friends, as all good friends should, offered to stay with him, but he insisted that he would be fine on his own and that the insurance would cover his flight home.
At around 8:40 p.m, Lars visited the EMT specialist in Varna, and in a phone call with his mother Sandra, Lars told her that the doctor had mocked him. He told his mum that the doctor refused to speak to him in English and refused any attempts to communicate at all, but still charged him a bill of 120 lever, which is about 60 euros. But whether the doctor refused to communicate with him or not, records do show that Lars did get a prescription for 20 tablets of the antibiotic Cefzil 500, also known as Cetirizine.
A question.
Yeah.
For Dr. Saruti Bana.
Yeah.
Does one need antibiotics for a ruptured eardrum that is not a bacterial infection?
I mean, I have no idea what's happened.
Preventative,
here.
Maybe, but yeah. I suppose there's not much else you can do for a ruptured eardrum than wait for it to grow back.
Yeah, and maybe because the pain had gotten worse, maybe there was some sort of infection, and that's why they give it to him. But also, you know, if the doctor's not even really speaking to him very clearly, you know what it's like. When you go to other countries, sometimes people just love giving you antibiotics.
That's true.
So no idea.
In Korea, they give it to you as an injection in your butt. You can go in for literally anything. Depression, antibiotics in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
Your infection straight in the butt.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, same thing in India. What's wrong with you? Don't care. Bend over. So at around 9:40 p.m., so about an hour after he had been to the doctor, Lars took the same cab that he had used to get there to go to a pharmacy. But this pharmacy only had a pack of 10 Cefzil 500 in stock. So Lars got those and then went to a second pharmacy to get the rest at about 10:05 p.m. After this, Lars asked the cab driver to take him to a cheap hotel, and he ended up at the Colour Hotel, situated down a small side street in a fairly remote area far from the city centre. Hate that. Not a fan. No, thank you very much. In this room at the Colour Hotel, a slightly panicked Lars phoned his mum to tell her that when he was checking in, the man behind the reception had copied down his credit card details. Alarm bells. That's bad news. I have told you this story before. When I was in Indonesia, this woman scanned my passport and then took a picture of my passport and like had it for way too long and was writing things down. And I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But when you're like, what's going on? They suddenly just pretend like they can't speak English and they just ignore you. And then obviously in an airport, when you ask, excuse me, what's going on, or you're even slightly questioning, they're very much like, can you just take a step back?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. But I have no idea why that woman was doing what she was doing with my passport.
Oh, yeah. It's like when they wouldn't let me out of Norway.
Oh, yeah.
Do I live here now?
But yes, very weird. Took a picture of my passport on her personal phone from what it looked like. So that was quite strange. But anyway, getting back to this, Lars, like I said, slightly panicked because his credit card details were noted down and he spotted this. Lars then took some of the antibiotics and called his mother again, this time asking her to add money to his phone. And this is 2014, but Lars had left his smartphone at home and was using like an old school brick phone on holiday just in case he lost it, like we all did at the time. Lars then also asked his mum to call his health insurance company because he wanted to be brought home with patient transport rather than flying on a normal airplane.
Shortly after this, Sandra called Lars back, and this time he sounded really stressed. Lars told her that he was leaving the hotel because he had a strange feeling about the fact that they'd copied his credit card details. Then he told his mother to cancel all of his credit cards and said that he had enough cash in hand anyway. Understandably worried, Sandra booked a bus connection to Germany for Lars since he wasn't allowed to fly. The bus was due to depart the following day at 11:30 p.m. on the 8th of July from Varna bus station. At the end of the call, Sandra told her son to get some sleep because the journey home was going to be long and horrendous. And this is when things started to get really weird. Moments later, Lars phoned his mum back and said, "There's something wrong with the hotel." He didn't specify, but Sandra recalls that Lars was behaving as though somebody else was listening in on their conversation. At the end of the call, Lars simply said, "I have to get out of here," and hung up the phone.
Meh. And look, I'm not trying to be a hotel racist, but we've all seen Hostel.
Yep.
Yes, and God, where was the original Hostel filmed? Because Bratislava. Mm. Bratislava, because I went there and not to the hotel. I wanted to, but my friend was like, absolutely fucking not, because you can stay in the hotel.
Yeah, you're asking for it there if you're doing that. No, thank you.
And there is a fear, right? Remote hotel, Eastern Europe, on your own.
Yep.
And you phone up and you're like, there's something wrong with this hotel. I'm like, Hostel.
No, Hostel or elevator game.
No.
Between 2:30 and 3 a.m., Lars called his mum again and told her that he had left the hotel. In a quiet whisper, he told her that he was being followed by four men and that he was hiding.
Oh, God.
And then he said, "I'm high up and could fall." And then he hung up the phone. At 3:06 a.m., he texted Sandra, "Cefsil 500, what is this?" and texted her the same thing again 10 minutes later. But because she was worried he was still hiding from the men, Sandra didn't phone him back. Instead, she decided to book him a flight to Hamburg, which was scheduled to depart Varna Airport at 4:20 p.m.
Oh my God, I just can't even imagine. Like, you'd just be like, your child is so far away. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what the fuck is going on. And what can you even do? Call the police and be like, where is he? In Bulgaria. Yeah. And be like, go find my son. It's terrifying. And again, giving serious Hostel vibes. Now, private investigator who retraced Lars's steps that night would later say that Lars may have been followed by men trying to rob him, as he was carrying a large Adidas duffel bag and wearing a bright yellow t-shirt, which made him stand out. A cab driver later reported that he saw Lars standing at the side of the main road, waving frantically at him. And even though this cab driver already had a woman in his car, he stopped and picked Lars up and took him to Varna Airport at 5 a.m.
Top bloke.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that tells you, I think, like, how panicked Lars must have looked for this cab driver to stop. But also, if I was in a taxi and a man was standing on the side of the road looking really, really frantic, I would also be like, why are you stopping? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Please don't let this man into the cab. Like, we don't know what's going on with him. So, yeah, I know. I don't want to sound like a total dick, but I'd be scared.
Yeah.
So both the cab driver and the female passenger have reported that Lars's pupils were very dilated when they picked him up. Now, this could have been due to the antibiotic Cefsil 500. It could have been due to the head injury he'd suffered when he got punched, according to him. Or it could just be because he was in a panic state at the time, thinking that he was being followed. Or because he was being followed. Once at the airport, Lars called his mother again and told her how happy he was to have made it to the airport. And I can imagine that, the relief. Mm-hmm. You think, oh my God, I'm at this place. I'm going to get home. Yeah. Everything's going to be fine.
I'm at this place where there are police and security.
Yes. And And once you're through the gates, you'll be like, right, no one's going to come after me here just to rob me.
Yeah, unless I'm Kim Jong-nam.
Quite. Don't let anyone touch your face. Don't let any little Asian ladies touch your face. Unless it's me. So, yes, he's happy he made it to the airport, but he did tell his mother that his phone was about to die and he needed her to transfer some money to him using Western Union. Now, neither Lars nor his mother Sandra had ever used Western Union before. But according to Lars, a Bavarian man that he met at the airport had explained to him how to use it. The man was no longer there, but Lars managed to explain perfectly to his mother how to carry out the transfer. And this particular detail is important because, seeing as Lars was able to recall all of that information, it does suggest that at this point at least he was thinking straight.
Lars's mother then gave him his flight details and transferred him 500 euros. Sandra then told her son to go and see the airport doctor to make absolutely sure that it wouldn't be dangerous for him to fly with a ruptured eardrum. But Lars then told her, they won't let me fly or drive.
Why wouldn't they let you drive with a ruptured eardrum?
The only thing I can think is that you might have to pass through some quite high altitude areas on the way from Bulgaria to Germany, possibly. Even still, though, it does seem extreme.
Yeah.
Lars told his mum that he looked dirty because of the hiding places he'd been in earlier. Sandra suggested that he go and freshen up in the bathroom and encouraged him that his ear couldn't be that bad, otherwise they would have admitted him to hospital. At around 9 a.m, Lars entered the doctor's office at the airport, where he had a consultation with one Dr. Kostov. That consultation lasted 40 minutes. Dr. Kostov took down Lars's passport details, examined his ear and gave him some eardrops.
Why did that take 40 minutes?
The doctor then took Lars's temperature, which was normal, which seems absolutely baffling to me for a man in a blind panic, and offered him some tablets, which Lars refused because of the bad experience he had with the Cefsil 500, we think. Then the doctor told Lars that he could fly, but made him sign a waiver and sent him on his way.
Now, according to Dr. Kostov, Lars seemed pretty nervous when he was in his room going through this appointment. And he said that when a mystery man opened the door to the doctor's office, looked inside and closed it, Lars muttered something quietly, told the doctor he needed to use the bathroom, and left. Now, like I said, this is according to Dr. Kostov. And we do have to mention that Dr. Kostov did change his story a number of times when later questioned by investigators. Which, look, people change their stories, people forget things, and like that is not immediately indicative of some sort of guilty something. But it's a literal closed room situation and a very specific incident. Like, why don't you remember what happened? It is strange. Though, I don't know. And these are the stories that he goes through. To begin with, Dr. Kostov told the police that the man who had come to the door was an airline employee who was looking for Lars at 4:20 p.m. But records show that it was only 9 a.m. when the man would have come to the door, so when Lars was in the appointment room. Then the doctor said that the man was an employee of the airport, not an airline employee. But why would an airport employee just open the doctor's consulting office door without knocking? I mean, maybe it's too much of a stretch, but it does seem bizarre. And then finally, because Dr. Kostov changes his story three times, finally he said that the man who had come to the door was wearing a construction uniform and that he actually had no idea who he was. Those are three very distinct stories.
Yeah.
And even stranger is the fact that later, when Germany's lead investigator came to the airport in Varna, he was presented with a man he was told was the mystery employee who had opened the doctor's office door. So they're just like, here he is. This is the guy that came to the door. You don't need to worry about interviewing everybody and figuring out what actually went on. But the German investigator later found out that this man he was presented with hadn't even been in the country on the date in question. Furthermore, the identity of the actual mystery man cannot be confirmed by CCTV because there is actually a blind spot on the security cameras at the entrance to the doctor's office. So we don't know who it is, but somebody did come because Dr. Kostov says somebody did come. But did they? I don't know because Lars never tells us because he's... Oh no, he does tell his mum. I don't know. It's really weird. I don't know.
When Sandra realised that her son had not boarded his flight, she phoned the airport. But seems like absolutely nobody there was interested in helping her. So then she phoned the German consulate in Varna at around 11 p.m. and spoke to someone called Mrs. Miltrova, a and explained to her that her son was in trouble, he needed help. About an hour later, Mrs. Miltrova phoned Sandra back and told her that Lars had gone to the airport doctor, that he seemed anxious, he left to use the bathroom, but he never returned. He left his travel bag, his ID, his phone, and his backpack behind. The following day, the 9th of July, a missing persons report was filed in Germany. That same day, the power plant that Lars worked for commissioned a private detective and a Bulgarian lawyer from Varna to investigate Lars's disappearance. 2 weeks later, on the 24th of July, Sandra travelled to Varna and met with the lawyer, and the two of them drove to Varna Airport to watch the security footage of Lars. Strangely, she was told by staff that the footage of Lars entering the airport was unavailable. And the footage of Lars she was shown by the airport wasn't sent to the police until 7 months later.
Now, the most disturbing footage that is out there was of Lars after he left the doctor's office. It's the one that we mentioned at the top of the show, and it is out there on the internet, so you can go watch it for yourself if you want to. In this video, you can see Lars sprinting out of Varna Airport before slowing to a jog when he suddenly seems to collect himself. Lars then checks his back pocket, which we now know had his passport in. He looks around and turns left about 5 meters away from some police officers. Then he begins to sprint again, as fast as he can, behind a reversing bus. Jumps over an 8-foot fence in seconds and sprints through a field of sunflowers towards the nearby forest. And that is the last glimpse of her son Sandra ever had. She later said that, quote, "My feelings tell me that my son knows what he's doing. He's getting himself to safety." So let's go through all of the weirdness and the theories about everything we've just learned, starting with the strangeness with the security footage at the airport and Dr. Kostov. In one short clip of Lars walking past a camera, he's holding food that he'd bought at the airport. But there's no footage of him buying it. And of course, there's no footage of him entering the airport either, because the airport just said that's unavailable. There is also no footage of Lars going to the bathroom, where he went to clean up before he went to see the doctor. Somebody at the airport must have deleted this video, or it must have been lost or mishandled or something. Also, and this is very important, all of the videos that Sandra was shown of Lars were cropped, so it's not like they just lost it all. Somebody seems to have made a significant effort to trim down what investigators saw. Another odd thing worth thinking about is why the lead investigator from Germany was told that the mystery employee who came to the doctor's office turned out to be a man who wasn't even in the country at the time. Why is the airport desperately trying to provide an answer here without just letting the investigator do his own digging?
And if that's not weird enough, how about the fact that a few days after Lars's disappearance, the German Foreign Office released a notice warning tourists about doctors in Golden Sands, Bulgaria. They said there had been a number of cases where local private doctors had made complex, expensive misdiagnoses and unnecessary treatments. The doctors would then tell patients that failure to pay would result in the threat of being prevented from leaving the country and having their passports restricted. And we have to remember that Lars told his mother that they weren't going to let him fly or drive. As for the Cefsil 500, Lars was prescribed. One of the private investigators spoke to both Bulgarian and German doctors. Bulgarian doctors didn't see anything odd about it, but German doctors felt that it was a questionable dose to prescribe Lars and mentioned that they rarely prescribe that particular antibiotic. Some experts do say that there could be a connection between the antibiotic and the strange behaviour Lars exhibited before his disappearance, but it's a very rare side effect, and it would be dependent on whether he was mixing it with other drugs or alcohol. If he was doing that, it could potentially have led to hallucinations or a panic attack, considering he'd already had a fairly stressful night before telling his mum he was being followed by dangerous men. This, along with the fact that he was in a foreign country alone, and the alleged fight that he was in on the way back, and the copious amount of alcohol he had consumed, could have cumulatively led to some sort of mental break.
Now, there's also the theory that if Lars's ruptured eardrum was a result of a blow to the head, Lars may have had a serious undiagnosed head injury, which possibly could have caused some sort of aneurysm. Now, these have been known to cause memory issues in people, which could explain why Lars hasn't returned home if he is indeed still alive. And many believe that Lars may well be living on the streets of Europe somewhere unaware of who he actually is, which is just some sort of horrible hell.
Mess unknown.
Oh, God. So since Lars's disappearance, there have been multiple reported sightings of him around the world, which people post on the Facebook group that Sandra has set up. Through the page, there have been 15 missing Germans found, but no Lars. But the most promising sighting was in 2016, when photos of a homeless man in Brazil were posted. This man had long hair and a beard, but he did look very similar to Lars. So Sandra reached out to the Brazilian authorities, asking them to investigate. But they found that this man's blood type wasn't a match for Lars. But he was someone who was missing. Turned out that this man was a Canadian named Anton Palipa, who had run away from home when he got in trouble for a burglary in 2012. Anton also had schizophrenia and had actually managed to survive the 4 years that he had been missing with no ID, living on the streets. And he'd ended up in Brazil because he had managed to travel miles without a passport. Thanks to Sandra, Anton was reunited with his family who had been looking for him for years. And obviously, a case like this only fueled Sandra's hope that her son could possibly be out there in a similar situation somewhere.
A private detective, known as Rainer, who was hired by Sandra, is apparently, still to this day, actively investigating Lars's whereabouts. Rainer said that they've done almost everything possible in their investigation. 100 volunteers had searched the entire area around the airport. They'd scanned it from above with a plane and even used a thermal imaging camera attached to a drone. They had a glimmer of hope when they found an improvised hut in the forest and gave a tracker dog one of Lars's jackets to get his scent. But Rainer said that although the dog did seem to be onto something, it lost the trace after a short distance. Pushed to utter desperation, understandably, Rainer and Sandra even set up speakers in the forest and fixed a loudspeaker to a car broadcasting his mother's voice calling him whilst they drove around side streets hoping that even if his memory was impaired, he might recognise her voice.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Then they contacted every TV station, radio station and newspaper to get their message out as far as they possibly could to look out for Lars. As for the Bulgarian police, Rainer said they were next to useless in the investigation. They not only refused to share any information with him, but they also refused to take on board any of his either. Rainer and Sandra firmly believe that Lars is alive out there somewhere, and they vowed to continue their search for him until they find him or his body.
After speaking to doctors in Berlin, PI Rainer believes that it's possible Lars is suffering from amnesia caused by the blow to his head. And Rainer cites an example of a 16-year-old boy from America. This boy suffered a head injury which triggered amnesia, which caused him to forget his entire life. This boy then went on to begin a whole new life and grew up to have a wife and 2 children, but then at the age of 51, suffered another blow to the head in a car crash. This suddenly caused him to remember his life up until the age of 16 and forget everything after it. Cases like this, Rainer says, are why he and Sandra still hold on to hope that Lars is alive and out there somewhere. And he urges people to keep an eye out, no matter where they are. And if they see a homeless man resembling Lars, even if he has a beard and long hair which may hide his features, please to take a photo, note down the location, and to inform them via the Facebook page, because they will follow it up, no matter how far away it is. It's crazy. I feel like in other cases of missing people, there's like something that kind of suggests what could have maybe happened. And of course, there are many other cases where you're just like, what the fuck? But this is such a bizarre story. Lars was making every attempt he could to come home. It wasn't like he was trying to go out there and fake his own death. He had no reason to. He clearly had a stressful life because his dad wasn't very well, but he had friends, he had a job, he had an employer that cared enough to hire a PI and a lawyer for him. Like, there's nothing that really indicates that Lars was trying to vanish. And it's just so desperately sad. The video footage is what makes it so shocking.
Yeah. I think the most likely scenario is that he did just have some sort of panic attack and leg it. And God knows what happened to him after that.
And I feel like if he had died, like if he had run out into a road and been hit, then there is a body that needs to be accounted for.
Yeah.
And also presumably because his mum and the PI that she hired were looking so hard for him, there would have been notification of, oh, there's a person matching that description.
True. They're looking all over the world.
Quite. But yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird one. And I think it is one of those bizarre ones, right? That's just like, in 2014, to just go on a lad's holiday and to just vanish.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just always have an AirTag. I know it sounds a bit like flippant, but no, I am honestly, I'm a fan. I'm just like, if I ever have kids, I'm sewing AirTags into everything. Like, just what the fuck? People can just go missing and you're just like a needle in a haystack. I'm like, no, AirTags on everyone. AirTags for everyone. Fucking hell. But yeah, that's it, guys. That is this week's shorthand. Not sponsored by Apple AirTags, but instead by Amazon. Though you can buy Apple AirTags on Amazon if you should choose to do so. So I don't know. Do one of those things. And we'll see you next time after my brain stops being whisked by this mystery. Bye.
Bye.